Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's Andy's Girls. Just for the record books, I do want to say that right before pressing record, I said, fuck me, and then sighed. It's episode. And so listen, here's the deal. This has been an interesting week for Bravo content. I am catching up on Potomac, started the journey. I've been doing some Instagram storying about that. Saw in what I thought was excellent episode of Beverly Hills, a genuinely excellent episode of Beverly Hills, Salt Lake City reunion part one, watched that and thought to myself, oh, I'm slightly fucked when I end up unpacking that because I had some takes that are not maybe going to be what people want to hear, but they're honestly how I felt. And then, of course, the atomic bomb that was The Real Housewives of New York. And a finale that the network did literally everything possible not to, quote unquote, spoil in the lead up to the finale itself. I watched it live because I figured, well, I want to be a part of this communal experience for this thing that I've been told repeatedly over and over again by cast members doing press, certainly by Andrew Cohen. The network as a whole is something that has never happened before. So I thought, well, New York has been full of shit the entire season, so let's see what happens. And today, recording this, I don't even know, Thursday evening, I just spent the last several hours doing some stuff, thinking about New York, but also transcribing a large part of the episode, because I actually think, rather than me sort of summarizing what happened, it was exceptionally important that I had direct quotes of what cast members said and like a TikTok of what occurred. But circling back, I'm sure this is going to be a 19-part, 6-hour episode. I posted on social and I said, listen, what do you, you know, a crazy week for Bravo content. Noting that I'm still catching up on Potomac, what do you want to hear about first as far as a deep dive? Beverly Hills, Salt Lake City, or New York? And New York came out with like 50% of the vote in this Instagram story poll. And I was like, okay, let's do it. Let's deep dive. Before diving deep, I do want to say that this episode is going to include topics that may be triggering to listeners, including but not limited to a focus on sexual assault and rape, how that has been discussed on Real Housewives of New York, trauma, and also some conversation around prior Housewives content that included domestic violence, addiction, mental health, and suicide. I also want to say the National Mental Health Lifeline in the United States is 988. At the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, they understand that life's challenges can sometimes be difficult, whether you're facing mental health struggles, emotional distress, alcohol or drug abuse concerns, or just need someone to talk to. Counselors are here for you. You are not alone. I'm also including some show notes to an organization called RAIN, which is committed to supporting survivors of sexual violence, cultivating communities of anti-sexual violence activism. Did I say that correctly? I hope I did. And promoting policies that deliver justice and hold perpetrators accountable. Their info is in the show notes. So I'm gonna have a little chat. I'm gonna say some stuff, some of which my opinions may be upsetting or frustrating to hear when it comes to things that are specific to New York. I am going to do my level best to express how I'm feeling in a way that may upset folks, but is kind of how I feel about how the shit show that was the finale of New York went down. So, but can you tell I'm like a little annoyed? I'm already activated. Is how I will frame this. So, right after the finale, I had to take the finale in increments. I started to watch. I didn't know what path we were going down. Then when I saw what I thought was the path, I started to get really fucking upset that so much of the episode was focused on sexual assault and trauma related to sexual assault. And there was nary a trigger warning before the episode aired. And then it took that extra turn, which I think was the WTF moment the network wanted us to respond to. And I got even more upset, not just because of the lack of a trigger warning, but also the framework of the episode itself, which I thought was like at best extraordinarily callous. So I posted something on my social. And I said, if ever there was an episode that required a trigger warning before an episode and not in the middle, it was tonight's New York finale. Bravo doesn't have a great track record on this, including previous storylines involving eating disorders, abuse, and mental health not treated with care. I would include addiction in that, but unfortunately, I ran out of characters and also my mind when I was putting this on Threads. I wish they looked at trigger warnings as something that could provide viewers the opportunity to decide whether they wanted to watch potentially upsetting content before and not after those scenes occurred, not covering their tracks after the fact, which is what I felt when I saw the fucking screen to contact RAIN, an organization that is incredible. Show notes are including that same contact information. But to do it after the fact is such a wild, unbelievable choice for an episode entirely focused on trauma experienced by a survivor of sexual assault, triggering an immigrant from Somalia, an area where sexual violence was an epidemic during war, and an arc, the aha moment, the this has never been done again, it's a must watch, please tune in, being focused on allegations that a cast member intentionally tried to trigger another cast member's trauma over sexual assault as a way to create plot or a dramatic response. I was fucking horrified. So I think that, you know, and I've had conversations with many, many AGs in my DMs, and I'm really appreciative for it. I'm appreciative for people reaching out, telling me how upset they were, how triggered they were from their experiences surviving sexual trauma, sexual assault, and tuning into an episode they thought would be iconic and entertaining, and finding out, kind of being hit with the fact that seemingly the vast majority, and obviously the WTF woe moments, are all built around sexual assault trauma. So hearing from people who felt incredibly triggered, very upset, violated, people who started to watch the episode and stopped, others who were thank fucking God, saying like, thank God that people are talking about this and I hadn't started the episode because it would have been too upsetting. And also people, understandably so, saying, listen, I don't get what the like brouhaha is about. There have been other upsetting circumstances, experiences that have been used for plot on Bravo, sometimes sloppily done. How is this any different? And those are incredibly well-intentioned questions. And I was happy to engage in conversation with it because it's a genuine, understandable question to have. One that I think Bravo did its absolute level best to avoid, because to think in that way would have required them to think about the audience as people, which I think they kind of like showed us in this episode. They wanted to think of us as anything but, which was a kind of strange strategy to have. I looked up some stats. The National Sexual Violence Resource Center, according to the National Sexual Violence Resource Center, 91% of the victims of rape and sexual assault are female, 9% are male. There's something to be said for acknowledging that regardless of a person's gender, and often survivors of sexual assault who are male, who are non-binary, are left out of the conversation in ways that is like incredibly, in ways that needs to change, right? We need to ensure that everyone is a part of the conversation when we talk about rape and sexual assault. But it is something that the vast majority of victims are female, and that Bravo's audience is 76% female. So when you know the stats of how unfortunately common it is for women throughout their lifetime to have experienced some form of sexual assault, when you think about how sadly, upsettingly common that is, and how overwhelmingly the Bravo audience is female, and you know, because this wasn't, there was a team of producers, editors, production execs, network execs, who all, Andrew Cohen, who all signed off on the content of this episode. We can have a conversation about whether or not this episode was handled with any kind of sensitivity, which I would argue it wasn't. But that is a separate conversation from the strategic lack of sensitivity that Bravo showed for its audience. Bravo has the ability to really kind of focus on how incredible it is that The Housewives is all about, you know, women's stories, storytelling often not produced by women, but featuring women on camera. And I guess there's a line where we've all decided that it sort of doesn't matter what the experience is of the likely vast majority of people watching this episode. We don't need to think in those terms, which we've been happy to do with other circumstances, because our focus is on exploiting this as much as possible, intentionally not providing any kind of content note or trigger warning, because they wanted it to land with the largest possible noise. I think the executives were thinking a lot of people are going to at some points get really upset at Uba, at some points get really upset at Brynn, at some points get really upset at other members of the cast. And even if, especially if that noise is negative, we don't want to enable anyone to do anything but yell and scream at the TV. That they are thinking in terms of like, there's no such thing as bad press. That if people get upset by this, that is a response that they want because they want people to continue talking. That is so fucking reckless when you talk about trauma triggers on an episode that is entirely focused on them. And listen, is Bravo, I think we get into this kind of conversation of absolutes that like, and also the idea of, you know, is the world a safe space? Why do we have to treat content in that way? Are we babying people? Are we not enabling people to have some sort of exposure to things that might upset them? Why is that always a bad thing? And I think, is Bravo a safe space? No. Is the world? No. But I think we need to talk about expectations. This isn't an argument for eliminating problematic or upsetting people or material. But I think it is quite literally about the safety and care of cast members in the audience. Like, how did Beverly Hills start the season immediately following Russell's suicide? It was a season that also revealed that he was physically violent and abusive toward his wife. They gathered members of the cast to talk because it was an incredibly upsetting situation and the show wanted to make clear they understood. It also, one could argue, also gave them a pass. And because news about Russell's suicide was obviously public, a person could argue they had no choice but to start the season in a way that felt like they were paying respect to how upsetting content, including content with Russell while he was alive in episodes that aired. I think it's wild that Bravo did nothing, intentionally nothing, when it comes to the New York finale. I also think we should maybe talk a little bit about trigger warnings. Often, Housewives is focused on upsetting material, unlikable people who do shitty fucking things. So why are so many people up in arms about the lack of trigger warnings before the New York finale? Why is the fury about sexual assault not having a warning about that, about the conversation, the drama, whatever else? How is that different than other situations, plot lines on Bravo that might be upsetting to viewers? I completely understand that argument. I'm also not saying, I'm, you know, lightly yelling my feelings, but I'm not saying I'm right in any of this. I'm also quite obviously not a mental health provider, not someone who works full time in an area focused and devoted to trauma. There are any number of incredible organizations that whose voices should be heard. And also, I've read so many essentially case studies and opinion pieces about whether or not trigger warnings should exist if they actually, in fact, potentially re-trigger people, provide negative instead of neutral or positive benefits. If you are looking for an argument about trigger warnings, yay or nay, you can find it from any number of reputable schools and organizations. I also think a trigger warning is not intended to be a warning against cast members going over the line. They have crossed lines zillions of times before, and some of those are iconic moments that could be upsetting. But this was specific content framed around sexual assault, and trying to frame a storyline around sexual assault to work under the umbrella of housewives. It doesn't and it shouldn't. A person can, should talk about their experiences as a survivor of sexual trauma, but to air an episode where sexual assault triggers are being exploited from a cast member who does not appear to be well is crossing a line for viewers and the franchise. You know, I was reading a little bit about trigger warnings. A Berkeley professor, this is Andy's Girls 101, defines a trigger warning as something that refers specifically to psychological triggers that might cause an extreme and unconscious reaction for people who have experienced trauma like physical or sexual assault. There's the conversation, sort of one of the critiques against trigger warnings of like, isn't this, but you can't hide from life, right? That's something that some people say in advocating against trigger warnings. But that idea of quite literal exposure therapy is done with the guidance of a medical professional. To me, this isn't an argument that Bravo is or should be identified as a clinician to help audience members who have experienced or survived trauma. But to me, a trigger warning, which needed to air before at the beginning of the episode, before the episode started, it's an expression of understanding that its content for this episode that followed was built entirely around trauma related to sexual assault. Brynn is saying she was triggered by a cast member during the shooting of the episode. I kind of stumble through. Is the argument that the network is unaware viewers may include other survivors of sexual assault? The network is framing this, as Andy did in promoting the episode, as a heavy, never-before-seen episode. It is beyond irresponsible and reckless to edit and produce a finale with sexual assault trauma as the framework of entertainment and explosion. They also went out of their way to look for the largest possible response in its audience. That still would have occurred based on the edited episode, even without a trigger warning. So why not enable viewers who may find content specifically around sexual assault triggering to consent to watching that? Why did Bravo keep us intentionally unaware? As intentionally unaware, one could argue, as several members of the cast. Why would you do that at the scale that you have when hundreds, or at least, you know, for not hundreds of thousands, for New York, it's probably like a couple dozen viewers. I mean, who are we kidding? The show is terrible. Why keep us as unaware as seemingly everyone else in that cast? And I started to think about Fargo, which is such an incredible show. I can't even tell you. And the most recent season, I was just kind of thinking as I was walking around today, and I was like, I'm really appreciative. And I remember feeling this when I watched the episode, that for certain episodes, they had a trigger warning before the episode aired. And I Googled it because I was like, that did happen, right? Like, I wonder if there was any conversation, yay or nay, around the use of those trigger warning screens, and saw an interview with the creator of Fargo, who said, sort of as a response as to why they were included, he said, "My responsibility is to tell you, the viewer, this story without traumatizing you." So for people who are watching storylines involving domestic violence, who may themselves have survived domestic violence, he wants to enable a way for people to opt out. Because if you think that you might be traumatized, he wants to provide the opportunity for people to consent to this experience and consent to entertainment that might be upsetting. It doesn't mean that someone is going to automatically choose not to watch. It's just about enabling consent, which ironically, when you're thinking about this in the framework of sexual assault, consent in how a vast majority female viewership is going to watch the show, I think is fucking important. I really do. There is, to me, an irony about an episode seemingly built on a cast member arguing that her sexual assault trauma isn't being respected by her cast, being aired by a network that has done its level best to disrespect viewers who may also be triggered. Bryn, at one point, perhaps the most explosive point, says that Uba is using slut-shaming language specifically because she knows that Bryn was raped and was looking to trigger Bryn's sexual assault trauma for a response. How else can a person understand Bravo's decision to treat this accusation and the literally, truly shocking turn of events in the episode by not sharing a note with its audience at the start of the episode and not a link to an organization after scenes have occurred in the middle of the ep, and I believe possibly also at the end? Bryn is saying, I am a survivor of sexual assault. A cast member is using that as revenge to possibly, I don't know, win the show. That in itself should be a line in the sand. Production should care about a cast member's mental health and safety, and the network should care about its audience. Obviously, judging by how things evolved as the episode went along, there was more here happening, but it just kind of feels like the network intentionally believes that a metric for success is intentionally not having a level of care in the content that it is releasing to the universe that feels worse than, and consistently worse than, a lot of other networks and streamers. Was Bravo aware of how triggering this storyline would be? Yes. Did they go out of their way to hide the focus of the episode, therefore ensuring the absolute biggest response? Yes. They marketed the episode as something that had, quote, never been seen before. They wanted viewers to have no sense of what was to come as a way to provoke an explosion. This, to them, was a spoiler like anything else. What was the part that had never been seen before? We have had cast members talk about their experiences surviving sexual assault. We haven't had cast members accuse each other of exploiting sexual assault as a means to enact a trigger on camera. This, to me, also is a little bit of a window into what I have been saying consistently since we found out about what allegedly happened in Morocco, which is why, to me, the reason that that season of Ultimate Girls Trip shouldn't air is, in my view, absolutely confirmed with how the network handled the season finale of New York. And I have to think to myself about how Andy, well after knowing that Caroline alleged that she had been sexually assaulted by a fellow member of the cast, well after that, Andy was, and before people filed suit, Andy was promoting Ultimate Girls Trip 4. He said in a 2023 like press meeting, it's there, it's done, and I hope everyone sees it soon. Because they were thinking about the explosion, entertainment, Lord knows the stakes are pretty fucking high, that would come out of Morocco. If anybody had a question that maybe Morocco would be organized or produced, released in a way that would feel responsible, not only to Caroline, the cast, but also the greater audience, I think exhibit A through Z is the New York finale. I watched that finale and I thought, this is so fucking reckless. And to me, I'm speaking specifically of the content that was aired, the way it was built, the fact, to me, at the heart of this, that there was no trigger warning before the episode. You cannot fucking tell me that they would have done anything but the most dire, exploitative shit if Morocco would air. And I know that's a downer. Listen, Alex McCord would love to have her back in literally anything. Like, the cast for Morocco was fucking exceptional. But also, Bravo noting certainly the circumstances are different in Morocco versus the New York finale, Bravo, I don't think that Andy, well after the point of knowing what a cast member had alleged occurred during production, was aware or of the view that it was anything but fascinating entertainment.
I have a new goal for 2025, a new beginning, working on improving my French. We've all heard new year, new you a million times, but why just stick to one version of yourself? Pear Eyewear has tons of shapes and styles to match any new vibe or hyperfixation, so you can keep trying new things and switch up your look anytime you want. Base frames start at just $60, including your prescription. Plus, you get 15% off by using code AndysGirls at PairEyewear.com. I am an absolute eyewear girly. It's even in the illustration for this pod. And I am rocking an acrylic pair of the Soto glasses from Pair Eyewear. I also got a bunch of top frames, black, blush, and for just a little bit of zest, watching Beverly Hills, Diamonds and Rosé, the rose gold sparkle. I like wearing the acrylic on its own, but the great thing about Pair Eyewear is these top frames you get to choose. You snap right on top and you have a whole new look. It's a budget-friendly way to change your eyewear without compromising on style or quality. And my favorite part about ordering from Pair Eyewear is it's stress-free. There are free returns and exchanges within 30 days, no questions asked. You can also find your perfect frame shape from home with virtual try-on. Show off new sides of yourself this year. Go to PairEyewear.com and use code AndysGirls for 15% off your first pair. And support the show by mentioning Andy's Girls, a Real Housewives podcast, the pod you're listening to right now, sent you in your post-checkout survey. That's Pair, P-A-I-R, Eyewear.com, code AndysGirls. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now. In our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, this season of Real Housewives of New York, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through. For me, it's those couple days before my period when I just don't feel like myself. And there's also perimenopause and menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. The good news is we don't have to suffer through anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. Hashtag spiritually mid-20s plus. That's why Hormone Harmony is perfect for women of all ages who are struggling with life-disrupting symptoms such as PMS symptoms like irritability, moodiness, discomfort, menopause symptoms like hot flashes, night sweats, poor sleep, and feeling tired all the time. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony is not just a hormone-supporting supplement. It's become a phenomenon. And the biggest benefit? Feeling like myself again. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code AndysGirls at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code AndysGirls for 15% off today. I never knew you could treat depression symptoms from your phone. But with this prescription app called Rejoin, it's possible. It's for adults age 22 and up with major depressive disorder who want to add to their antidepressant medication. And get this, it's the first and only prescription app authorized by the FDA to treat depression symptoms. Rejoin does not replace your current medication. Be sure to use as directed by your healthcare provider. And if your depression symptoms worsen, seek help immediately. Get started today by talking to your healthcare provider or visiting meetrejoin.com. That's meetrejoin.com.
And there have been other situations that maybe haven't passed the smell test. I was confused and uncomfortable. This is when it comes to content, specifically about the Brandy and Denise situation, because there were points where Brandy was talking about a lack of consent, and it was always used as entertainment. No one ever kind of circled back to that in a way that felt intentionally gray and very uncomfortable. And there are also other situations. I know that Brynn has been dragged through the fucking coals after this episode aired. And I think I had a conversation with a friend of mine who's also a fellow creator, who's much more aware of like stuff that's happening on like Twitter and other spaces than I am, and was really, understandably so, like really upset at a level of mocking toward Brynn, which is different from accountability and critique. And, you know, we had kind of like a back and forth about what happened, and both came to the same kind of conclusion that, and we'll get to it, but that while there's a level of accountability that Brynn should have for her actions, the fact that she hasn't publicly apologized to Uba is, to me, shocking and also unfortunate. I don't know if that will happen in the reunion. I don't know what will happen in the reunion. I think the fact that the reunion is being held is like fucking insane. I did a Patreon episode when the New York reunion dropped, hours before the New York finale, where I did a live reaction to the Patreon and just some sort of predictions for what I thought the finale would be like. And I said, you know, the way it's being promoted, it feels like there's going to be some sort of Scary Island situation, but it's not going to be funny because the cast isn't funny, number one, but also it feels like something else might be going on here. And I didn't know if it was going to be Uba, who has seemed uncomfortable and not really able to function within a relatively like produced superficial kind of universe. She has not had a great season, like sort of understatement of the year. So I didn't know if it was going to be something possibly involving Uba. I don't actually even remember if I mentioned Brynn, although in the trailer for the reunion, obviously there's a moment between Jenna and Brynn where it's like something serious is being discussed here, but I couldn't make heads or tails of it. So I didn't quite know what to expect. But when you think about like, and I'm skipping ahead here, so I apologize, but when you think about like Brynn and accountability, this isn't going to make anybody happy, but it is the truth or the fact of the matter that we had an extraordinarily explosive reveal on an episode of Atlanta several years ago that a person could argue is like maybe the single worst thing that a cast member has done to another cast member, which is to intentionally, publicly accuse them, meaning Phaedra for Candy through Portia, of plotting to sexually assault another cast member, meaning Portia. Phaedra has never apologized for that. I don't know how much of that is, and this isn't an excuse, but like Phaedra's an attorney. I don't know how much of that is like a feeling that Candy might sue her. I'm assuming it's because God only knows, I don't know what would happen to her law license if she admitted the truth, which I think most of us, well, actually, I don't even know if it's most of us, but many of us agree was Phaedra, for her own reasons, making up this thing to try to ruin Candy's character. There are two things here that I think are important. One is Phaedra has never publicly admitted or apologized for what she did, which led to her dismissal. The other important thing is she didn't lose her job for good. She went on Traitors, obviously had a wildly successful turn on Traitors, Ultimate Girls Trip, went back to Atlanta, and Married to Medicine. She is all over the goddamn place. So while I understand a lot of upset toward Brynn, she is not the first housewife. And there are so many other examples. This is just one that is, it's not apples to apples. I'm making that clear. And there have been many housewives who have done like despicable things. But also note, the network said even after Jenshaw had been convicted of federal crimes, they're like, we'll always leave the door open to maybe her making a return. So there have been other examples. I mean, Jenshaw committed literal federal crimes, going after the most vulnerable communities so she could buy a car and have that she did not have a claw fist, let me tell you that. But that warehouse of ungodly overpriced clothing, which she did not pay for, let's just say, with solely her own cash. There have been other examples of things happening that did not necessarily involve a cast member taking accountability. So while I can understand, appreciate, and agree that Brynn owes Uba an apology, and we'll get into it, we'll get into the nuance, I think it's also important to understand that there have been other housewives who have done despicable things who haven't apologized. That's not me saying Brynn gets a permission slip, but I do think when it comes to a level of pure rage that has been leveled her way, that there have been other housewives that have done terrible things who have been welcomed back by the network and the fan base at large. It does to me feel strange to think about the New York trailer now, having watched the New York finale on what fucking night was it? Was it Tuesday or Wednesday? Tuesday night, I think. I don't remember the days. Every day is a nightmare. I just have to kind of think to myself, how on earth is Brynn going to yell at Becky Minkoff about literally anything at the reunion? I note that saying. I love to yell at Becky Minkoff in my head about literally anything at the reunion. So I typically wouldn't be against a little bit of lobbed sass, but we are all pretending, the Housewives universe as a whole, that what happened during the finale still works under the Housewives framework. It doesn't. Brynn doesn't. This shouldn't. We shouldn't be watching this. It was mishandled. It didn't need to air and be edited as an episode of Investigation Discovery. It was a weird upside down game of like catch up or clue with weird apologies to Dateline. I have listened to any number of like death pods, but like this weird kind of like odd murderous style music with the four screen split of security footage aired in a way that was intentionally, it felt like a little bit of a crime series. But when you think about the content of it, I just don't think that was necessarily a match. And I also have to say, in my opinion, this is an opinion, this is a quite technically comedy podcast. So I don't know if we're going to get a lot of chuckles in this episode today, but blame Bravo, honestly, because that's like, I don't know. I'm not as comfortable as they are with what they are willing to do to get bad responses, but financially sound noise. I think Brynn, it's pretty clear. There's a lot that the cast said, certainly at the tail end of the episode, that I agree with. Brynn said that she is in therapy. Brynn needs help. Brynn has specific triggers, and perhaps, as members of the cast said, as a coping skill, including in order to survive what she experienced, including obviously as a child, in order to seek and receive necessary support to gain attention, isn't sometimes aware of what she's saying. Let's say that. Sometimes she might not be aware that people may not be picking up signals and info that she thinks is clear. She isn't aware that while she has suffered horrifying trauma, abuse, physical, emotional, and as we now know, sexual assault, that doesn't make her resulting behaviors permissible or non-existent. You can have empathy for someone. As Jenna said, you can and should have grace for someone, and also know that we, I think, this is Sarah talking, the dame, Auntie Sarah, that we as a community with this are out of our depth, and Bravo is absolutely no better. Empathy does not remove someone from accountability. I know that there are a lot of people who are sort of armchair psychologists who are applying that to proclamations of how people should feel about Brynn, how people should treat Brynn, whether or not she is allowed to be criticized. And I think empathy does not remove someone from accountability. And saying Brynn is still accountable for her behavior does not mean you don't have empathy for her. I think one of, to me, the most wrenching parts of the finale was watching Uba, who herself was triggered. She was hysterical. She was shaking. We're told this because we don't see it. She's curled up, crawling in a ball. You listen to the volume in her voice, the way she is expressing things, the way she is shrieking. That, to me, is a, she is experiencing trauma. The filming, the finale, was a traumatic event. I don't know what it triggered from her life and what she has experienced, but that shouldn't be discounted or minimized or eliminated in some way, regardless of what Brynn has said after the fact. You can hold her accountable. It doesn't mean you don't have to have empathy for Brynn. It also, this whole thing doesn't excuse Uba's actions this season. It really doesn't. And I think there have been any number of AGs where people have been critical of Uba's behavior, perplexed. I don't think this was a good season for her. I think that's a little bit of an understatement. But that finale to me was like a gaslighting clusterfuck. And the important clarity here is that nobody is questioning Brynn's sexual assault. Nobody. Nobody in the cast. I am not doing that now. The difficulty sometimes with me expressing things on the podcast is that I then hear from people who are upset about stuff I quite literally didn't say. You can project onto this episode and onto me potentially whatever you'd fucking like. You really can, but that doesn't mean that your feelings are fact, that your reality of events is in line with what I'm saying, and that if you are upset by what I'm saying, it doesn't mean that my opinion shouldn't exist. I think the difficulty here is so much of the episode, as Jenna says at the end, as many of the cast members said, is that like no one is going to know Brynn's intent. No one is going to know if she knew that perhaps, as everyone said clearly, Uba didn't clock what Brynn was telling her during this conversation, I think around BravoCon. We don't know. As much as people are aware in their minds and their expressions that like Brynn intentionally lied or Brynn definitely didn't lie and this is all attributed, she should not be held responsible because of what she's experienced, XYZ, the reality is we don't know. As Uba said, there are only three people who were present for that conversation. I think that's what she said. She was like, Brynn, herself, and God. And I don't know how to talk about this without acknowledging that ultimately I have no idea what was going on in Brynn's head. No, I just really don't know. But the thing that I think is missing here in some of the conversation is extending grace to Brynn that she refuses to extend to Uba herself. That is incredibly unfortunate and a little upsetting. Also, when you note that after everything Uba had been through that night, the next morning when she gathers with everyone in the cast except for Brynn. Was everybody there except for Brynn? Yeah, everybody in the cast except for Brynn. That she asks how Brynn is doing. That is not something we ever saw from Brynn. Her argument at points seemed to be, how dare anyone suggest that we think of other people? We need to kind of refocus here on what I've experienced. This is going to be tough. Yeah, I think the thing to keep in mind is that even when people are, as they did later on in the episode, questioning what Brynn told them and often repeatedly, emphatically passionately, no one on that show is questioned what Brynn experienced as a result of her sexual assault and with quite literally being a survivor of sexual assault. And I am not, nor would I ever do that now. But they are also very clearly saying, it seems like they are saying she was wrong when she full-throatedly said that Ubo was aware of her sexual assault and was using it for revenge. At a moment when, coincidentally, she wanted the cast to specifically hold Ubo responsible and be Team Brynn. I don't know how to, like, illustrate, and I don't mean this, I'm not a psychologist or a mental health provider. I am someone with a very healthy DVR. By healthy, I mean there's a lot of shows that I watch. So I don't mean this in a term that's meant to be anything but my reaction, which was it felt like there was a level of compartmentalization happening on the couch between Brynn and producers the day after. Not checking in on Uba, saying that the cast doesn't support her. I would argue, I think that they are doing their best. And I don't think, obviously, as Brynn has said repeatedly, she doesn't seem to agree. This whole situation is not meant for reality TV or Housewives. Brynn may be compartmentalizing, but there is something incredibly unnerving about watching a woman seem okay, quote unquote, as a way to maybe be a good cast member while knowing that Uba remaining upset would absolutely be used against her. And I have questions. Why did Brynn mention specifics of what she said that Uba knew with the women, but not with Uba herself, noting she had ample time to do so? She also at one point said, "My children are going to watch this," weaponizing a role she does not currently have as a way to add on the harm of what she said were Uba's actions. She also said, why can't a Black woman be successful, when minutes earlier she was dragging Uba herself? I have to wonder, when were her confessionals filmed? And to be honest, she makes this argument, I think, in the Rolling Stone interview, which was published the morning after the finale aired. The show, I think she argues that the show could have filmed, could have continued filming. I read the piece twice. Now I'm like forgetting. That's super helpful for us all. But the show could have continued filming after what happened the last night in Puerto Rico, but they didn't. They wanted to end with an explosion. They didn't want the audience to feel any sense of closure. They're applying a Salt Lake City text metric to a finale revolving around trauma from sexual assault. And also, I have some quotes from the Rolling Stone article. This is, oh God, I'm almost at an hour. Apologies in advance. But so I might share some of those, but you can also find the Rolling Stone piece readily available online. But in the article, Brynn says that she doesn't feel supported by the cast. I personally don't think the support she's looking for is realistic or viable. She's looking for absolution for her behavior, and she's not going to find it. Certainly not based on what the cast said during the finale and based on what the cast has said this week on social. And she shouldn't. The cast isn't responsible to give that to her, especially not when it comes at a high cost to Uba and themselves. What Brynn did was not okay. The question of her frame of mind and intention is beyond the scope of Bravo and this universe. The clearest answer coming out of the reunion, Brynn is not aware of what happened to other members of the cast as a result of her specific behavior, and feels that ultimately she is the victim of that night when the finale was filmed. She doesn't believe Uba is owed an apology. I think she actually thinks that would be a distraction from what she's experienced. She doesn't, I don't think she believes Uba's owed an apology. She also notes that the cast seemed happy as can be, living their lives. This is during the Rolling Stone article. While she was left to sort through what she feels is a lack of support. Then the finale airs. Brynn posts a video of a feather jacket and a trip to the opera. There is a lack of awareness and sensitivity that she feels that the cast has, and a feeling that she is not responsible for her acts. And that if the cast is shown dancing at a concert or something, she is trying to make clear that that is coming at the cost of trauma and coming at the cost of support. She is also, after this reunion aired that shows an absolute breakdown from Uba, is herself posting in a way that she argues is inappropriate and not reckless, but inappropriate and unsupportive. But she is doing the same and also not extending any grace toward Uba, noting the amount of grace that the cast extended her way, often at Uba's expense. Okay. I don't know if anything that I said makes sense. I also am thinking about a DM that I got that really landed for me. And I was like, God damn, this might be a satchel. So I might unpack it more on Patreon because I think it's a really interesting question, which was, I think it was sent before the New York finale. And then I watched New York and I was like, oh, this is not gonna, this is, the point made is completely understandable, but we just need to get through, honestly, the next couple of weeks of this because I have some thoughts, is why have I focused so much time in the last several episodes of AG Classic, and I think a person could argue on some episodes of the AG page, why would I focus a lot of time on content that I'm clearly saying I don't like instead of focusing said time on things that I do enjoy? And it's a totally valid, understandable thought, criticism, you know, feedback. Totally hear it. I think the thing of it is this podcast isn't focused only on entertainment that's successful. And unfortunately, or not, I think unfortunately, I always hope for Housewives seasons to be good. I don't want a season to be bad. It makes my life difficult. It also, typically, if I'm feeling a certain way, not that it's like equal to everybody else, but or the same as everyone else, but just the kind of conversations of what might be seen as an overall, you know, universally, but not. You know, identically hated. You know, there's some people who have enjoyed the season of New York or find value in it, that can sometimes lead to maybe not ideal episodes of AG, because I get the, like, why would a person want to listen to shit talking a franchise when there are other great franchises? My response to that is like quasi twofold, which is how twofold works. One is that's why there are extra episodes of AG, or, you know, two-part episodes, extended episodes, because there's a lot of stuff we talk about on the pod and a lot of it requires a lot of time. But also, this podcast isn't focused on me just like extolling the virtues and ignoring stuff that's making an impact. And for whatever reason, leading up to the New York finale, I have felt especially angry about New York. That has happened before. This isn't the first time that I've hated a season. I think season 13 of New York was something I hated. I think there have been seasons of Orange County that I've hated. There have been seasons of New Jersey that I've talked about throughout the season and hated. This season of New York isn't special in that way, but it does kind of just remind me, genuinely just remind me, of what I do on this podcast, sometimes, you know, in a way that feels like a third cousin of eloquent, maybe not even eloquent, something that feels like something. I think that what I'm interested in isn't like recapping an episode, ironic when you think that part two is going to be like very much focused on a little bit of a TikTok. And I don't mean TikTok is in the videos for youth, but more of like a run of the episode itself. And as a fellow youth, yes, videos stuff. I think that what is interesting, the conversations that I like to have on the pod are not just about having an opinion of something, but about exploring why it is that I have maybe a hot take. Sometimes that could be really focusing on a season that's magical, like fucking Salt Lake City this season and last season, where I didn't want to let go, where I can tell you right now I don't want to let go. But also there's something about this season and something about specific members of the cast, including at many points of AG Brynn herself, where I'm like, there's something fucking about her that I find not like discombobulating, but like I just, there's something about her that I have felt inspired to critique some of her behaviors in episodes past. And I just think this cast as a whole is a mess. And I think, you know, their pranks and misunderstanding a prank as humor is frustrating and annoying. And I think it's very ironic that the OG cast of New York was sunsetted off because the show got too toxic and Bravo replaced it with this. I mean, we could have a little bit of a laugh about that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know that that is has been successful at this point, but that's kind of like what the path that AG takes is like, yeah, I might spend a lot of time talking about something and talking about how much I dislike it. And I don't feel the need to choose that over something else. I kind of work in abundance, which is why I try to record as many episodes as I possibly can. But also when I don't, when I focus on something that feels maybe like too much, that the focus is too much, I think that's potentially because I record with different people and I want to hear their take on this one thing, which I'm sure can get monotonous really quickly. But I think it's also because I'm curious about the ways that we watch the show. I'm curious about not just, and often not primarily, what's shown on screen, but why we feel a certain way about cast member A or cast member Z. Like, that's the kind of stuff that I like. So why continue talking about something that I don't like? I think my answer to that is because it's provoking a reaction. And that, to me, I find interesting. It's not about feeling indifferent toward New York. I think it's, you know, a part of me is like, how do we get to those moments of understanding and celebrating Salt Lake City? Because a part of it is because like we know how bad things can get. And when it feels like there's this like shining star we should talk about, a little bit of a shooting star, but has extended for several seasons, I do want to talk about that. But also if it feels like we've hit a little bit of a crisis point on a franchise, or it's just like absolute darkness, I want to talk about that too. I think it's maybe not either or. And I think the why continue talking about this thing that you hate? Because I still think that there's value in the conversation, that it's not only or always about, but was this like show even good enough to merit a response? I think like, well, upside is we have something to talk about.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know if that makes sense, but it was a very, it was a message I really took to heart and I thought was really interesting and I wanted to respond. And then I'm thinking about New York and babes, I don't, first time I said babes, I don't know that I've hated something, hated the experience of watching for at least a day, truly dreaded the idea that I would have to record an episode about this. I've gone through some shit. A person could think potentially that now is the time to talk about it. I'm not going to. I mean this with all the love in the world. It's like nobody's business. And this is not the setting nor time. But, you know, when Brynn said she'd been sexually assaulted 3 years ago, I thought to myself, oh, shit, because that is, for me at least, like, not a lot of time. So it kind of depends, maybe, I guess, on people's opinions of what they've been through. But, like, for me personally, 3 years is like a minute. So I felt a lot of compassion for her in when she was saying that. And I kind of think to myself, like, how do I kind of communicate the ways that sexual assault, sexual trauma, it just can change a person. You know, I had a conversation with a loved one in the past year who was expressing a level of sadness and regret and guilt or whatever for the fact that, you know, what I experienced as a sibling of someone who became a quadriplegic. And there was a level of survival that I had to use as a child because of what we experienced as a family and the fact that my, you know, parents, understandably so, focused all of their energies on Jeff as well they should. But, you know, for the last couple decades, I've just kind of had to like figure stuff out. And I really felt for them and what they were saying. I was so appreciative. I was honestly, my first reaction was shock. I couldn't believe it. It's like the conversation that a lot of people dream of like someone taking responsibility and ownership. And I really was like more shocked even than appreciative. I felt both, but I honestly was really surprised. But the way it was kind of described to me was, you know, because this is like the worst thing in your life and something you think about every day. And the reality is, unfortunately, I have a pretty healthy list of different traumas that I've been through, some of which I haven't come even close to talking about on the podcast because it would be way too much for me and also wouldn't be appropriate for me. And it's stuff that I work through with my psychiatrist. And also, I just personally have been incredibly helped by an antidepressant. Like the lights, just everything kind of changed when I started taking an antidepressant. It was really, really in like intensive trauma focused therapy, which I continue to this day. But the thing that I thought to myself was like, oh, babe, you are so off. Not to say that I wasn't changed as a result of this terrible thing that absolutely broke my family, but that from a day-to-day perspective, that's not the thing that fucks me up. Like there's other shit that has had a wild impact on my life, the way I respond to things, trauma responses. And so I'm watching the New York finale and I just thought, I don't want to talk about this at all because I was so mad at the show treating this like almost a game of whodunit, whether or not Uba had done this thing and how passionately Brynn said, I would like never lie about this. She did. She absolutely did. I was so angry at the show for promoting this episode in the way they did, for rumors that like people even who were aware of the finale weren't allowed to communicate what was going to happen because it was a spoiler. Like, to treat sexual assault, to treat what gets into like the saddest, darkest parts of the Housewives universe, which is like, what could a person do to get ahead? That's the argument that Brynn makes at the beginning of the episode or middle of the episode, is like, Uba did this terrible thing to me. What she's saying is like, to win, to upset me, to, you know, violate and trigger a response, something the entire cast said at the end of the episode, clearly said they do not believe that Uba did, nor do I. But to treat all of this as like Heather Gay's monologue about, you know, receipts, screenshots, and I fucked up the order, so apologies, fucking everything I remember, was so deeply offensive that I felt like dirty. I just thought, like, this isn't what people signed up for. We, you know, like, Housewives often involves and is successful when it's like problematic people doing problematic things. But we didn't sign up for what happened. What happened wasn't normal or okay. And to treat it like anything else, or treat it like something that hasn't been happened before, where it's going to seem like it's a spectacular, was so fucking tacky. And I know that's saying something. We've seen some of these women's homes. Actually, not really specific to New York, but like, we've seen some of the insides. It's not she. To treat this like this, like that, or like a moment in Housewives history, is to have a gross misunderstanding, a lack of care that the network decided to have, potentially for members of its cast, most certainly for us. What is the bad part about just adding a trigger warning at the start of the episode? Because you want us to be surprised by this moment. And I don't think the network or Andy will ever get why the anger that some viewers have about Bravo's decision with this is different than anything else. I don't think they understand or care. And that's different from a viewer saying, well, I don't think we should have trigger warnings for episodes. We're dealing with stuff here that comes to like psychological triggers and trauma. And I could argue that the network bit off more than they could chew. And I have some experience in that, you know, from choking on a mushroom taco. And also over the course of a year, a hard-boiled egg. And most recently, some sort of fucking nut, pistachio nut. So I know a little bit about problems with a person's possibly moral, but also quite literal esophagus. And I just think Bravo's decision and how they marketed this, and a critical, key, active lack of care that they shared that so many other networks and streamers don't, is inexcusable and unacceptable. And the little screener that they did with Info for Rain following this as like a little PS of like, oh, PS, oh my God, I just thought of it. Oh, you know what? I was editing this and I didn't even think about it. And then you can't go back. Am I right? So like, I just threw in a little screener here after the fact to say, if you need some help and resources, you should get it. But why would someone need help? Because the vast majority of your viewership is female. And we talked about the stats when it's like a gender breakdown. And it felt incredibly crass. And I think that the network, especially because it's owned by NBC Universal, at least for now, is that there's a level of responsibility that the network doesn't activate, that a lot of other networks and streamers do. It's just such a fascinating lack of care and an unwillingness to respect its audience that I think is like genuinely unfortunate. And this is going to be a two-parter because part two, I quite literally transcribed this fucking episode. And I think it's important. Like, language, as we heard and were told multiple times, is key. The semantics here are important, as are the vibes. So I really did that because I thought it was something I felt responsible for doing. So you can listen to that where you're listening to this podcast because it's currently available. I don't know, man. It's one of those things. I completely understand people who feel that a trigger warning would in some way be unnecessary, or who feel that the upset expressed by a large amount of Bravo's audience is undeserved in the greater landscape of what housewives can do. And I just think about a conversation I had with someone and I was just like, yeah, this just crossed the line. And the person who doesn't watch Housewives but certainly has an opinion of them said, but isn't that what Housewives is about? Isn't it about people crossing lines? And I was like, no, but there are lines that just shouldn't be crossed. Or at least if those lines are being crossed and we can debate whether or not they should have, just give us a little heads up. Like, what's the worst part of what that's going to do? If you think as a network, as network executives, it's unfortunate that I feel like I bear more of a responsibility as a lowly podcaster than the network obviously does. But I think the drawback for them would have been, oh no, this would have been spoiled in some way. Or maybe they just don't think about us. I don't know. It was just so incredibly bad and inappropriate and terrible. It's like, I don't think that what a lot of people are suggesting the network does is a big lift. And I also think just the general flow of that episode was genuinely fucked. And those are separate conversations. I get it. And listen, agree to disagree. I mean, people I know, because I saw a little bit of it. People were like, oh, my God, you know, this was like a wow episode. And oh, my God, it like turned on its head. I totally get that. I also think that there is a response from the audience that to me at least feels different. And so I just kind of wanted to hop on and talk a little bit about my opinion of why I do think this night is different from any other night. And let's all open our hearts and Seder plates to talking about why. So a couple of you got that joke and mazel tov. Listen, let's head on over to part two because I did a little transcription that I'm pretty sure is at some points garbled. So can't wait for that. I'm going to go record it. You're about to listen to it. So head on over to me really doing more of a granular TikTok, trying to piece all of this shit fucking together. And again, to anybody associated with the production of this episode, I mean this in the kindest, gentlest way, but like truly go fuck yourself. So let's head on over to part two, shall we? Let's go. Bye.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.